The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Hello and good morning. You're very welcome along to Friday's OTB AM. There's no Adrian Barry. There's no Owen Sheehan. There's no Ger Gilroy. There's no Johnny Ward. No, it's me, Tommy, here this morning. I've also got Shane Hannan with me.
Hi, Tommy.
Shane, how are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Grand. We made it.
We did. How's your build-up going to Christmas?
Grand, yeah. Grand. I'm a little bit nervous with Christmas. Like, we do Secret Santa in our house. I can't say who I've got.
Okay, don't say that.
They might be listening. But tough person to buy for, let's just put it that way.
You have a big family.
Yeah, there's six of us.
Yeah.
But no, I'm looking forward to it. I'm in next Monday as well, so it doesn't feel like Christmas yet.
Same. Monday. I'm in next Monday too, but I thought I was in the wind down. I thought I was able to relax and take it easy. There'd be a couple of parties.
Yeah. The office is a decent buzz. We had a spin the wheel yesterday in the office, which required all of us to potentially win a prize.
It was good, yeah. I was shouting and roaring. What did you win?
A 10 euro coffee voucher.
Exact same.
Not the worst prize.
No,
but some people were walking away with hotel breaks and fucking cinema tickets and whatever else.
We all know it's fixed though, don't you?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. We rocked into the office this morning. Shane Hannan, when you're on that early shift, you're the first person in. Usually it's John Duggan.
Mm.
So you're in... John does his work now from 4 in the morning. What time are you getting up at?
As in he's in here for 4 in the morning?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in here for 3:30.
So I'm going.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, in for 3:30. That may or may not be true.
For anyone who missed it, what happened overnight? Because I'm not going to pretend I know what's happening in the darts, but...
Yeah.
Willie O'Connor,
Limerick man, was in action at the PDC World Championships, not the crappy BDO World Championships, which has happened in January.
Okay.
But it's the PDC at Alexandra Palace in London. Willie O'Connor, decent player, of course, in the second round. He was taking on Gerwin Price. Price is probably the second favourite to win the whole thing. Michael van Gerwen is the favourite.
Okay.
Price is a Welshman, very good player. But Willie O'Connor had the chance to cause a massive upset and knock him out last night. So in the last leg, on his own throw, he was told, Willie O'Connor, you require 4. So you obviously have to finish in a double, so that
this
means...
the very last.
Yeah, towards the very end of the match. Should have been the very end of the match. And 4, obviously, go for double 2. Simple maths. Even I know that maths. But he inexplicably started throwing for double 1.
Oh,
he obviously thought he had 2 left. And kept doing it. And there was clearly confusion on Gerwin Price's face, but... He checked out in his next turn at the hockey and won the match. And even after the match, he was speaking to the PDC, Willie O'Connor, and he was told about his mistake. And he even then was kind of like, no, I was going for 8. And then the interviewer was like, no, I'm talking about at the end when you went for, like, you were on 4 and you kept throwing for 1. And he was like, oh, I didn't really, I saw 2 on a board somewhere and just went for double 1.
That's
he
terrific.
Had no clue even afterwards.
Oh no.
So I wonder what would happen if Gerwin Price hadn't checked out and Willie O'Connor had to throw again. Would he again have gone for double 1 a second time? But it's inexplicable really at that level of darts, especially at the World Championships. Ali Pally is the peak of his profession.
Yeah.
Take a second, relax yourself and just work out the maths. These guys have been doing maths in their heads for their entire lives, but...
Yeah.
Pubs across the country. I'm sure he's been in pubs in Limerick doing maths for years, but it's not a mistake you see too often. And Gerwin Price progressed, Willie O'Connor's out. There is an Irish hope today, Kieran Tehan. He's a 20-year-old from Cork. He's in action this afternoon. He had a 3-0 win in the first round, so he's a good player. Ireland has, I think it's a field of 96, and 8 of the field are Irish. Well, we're Irish at the start.
There seems to be a lot of Irish around this year.
So like it's a decent, and Fallon Sherrock, of course, was the other big story, the first woman to win a match at a World Championships. So there's been a couple of decent stories. Raymond van Barneveld Barney is gone. He went in the first round. So
it has been interesting. Some people would say that darts isn't even a sport.
Yeah, Ger Gilroy sat in that very seat this week and professed the exact same. But you know,
Ger's been pushing that one for a while. Just back to that, Willie O'Connor. I heard you oohing and aahing this morning in the office. I'll be honest, it was a bit too busy to actually look up and see what was happening. But that's incredible. Like, where's that comparable to other sports? What would you compare it to? It's not like a 21-yard free. It's not like Desi Dolan back in 2000.
It's probably like
final against Meath.
It's probably like a team being level at 1-1, needing to win a match, and the striker taking the ball to the corner flag, not realising that, no, we don't need a draw, we need to win. And all the fans shouting at him going, you need a goal. It's kind of like that. And it's just cringing and awkward to look at when you're watching a match like that and that is happening. But
do you know what I think it's like? It's like in a game of rugby, going for a try when all you need is 3.
Yeah.
Going for a corner when all you need is the penalty.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Or going for a penalty. Like, it's just, You don't see it too often. Certainly not at that level. Now, the BDO, you might see it. The BDO has gone to, there was a massive split in darts in 1993. So the PDC and the BDO became two separate organisations. So it's the Professional Darts Corporation and the British Darts Organisation. The BDO is like, if you have darts on in the background and you hear you require two, that means they've thrown so many darts, they keep missing on the big darts and they have to go down. Like, in the PDC you'll hear, oh, you require, like, you could have 170 checkouts, which is the highest checkout, but the quality in the BDO is putrid compared to the PDC. I'd probably play in the BDO and I'm useless.
Really?
But, no, that's saying something. But it's the BDO Championships is on in the new year, the Indigo Nightclub at London's O2 Arena. So
okay,
it's just a far cry from Ali Pally. But like.
And come here, will you be throwing a couple of darts in the Squealing Pig this Christmas?
Well, I'll be throwing a few darts.
Good man.
Throwing a few shapes as well, but.
Good.
It should be decent. But like, darts is one of those sports, I guess it's such a. It's a certain class of played darts. It's the same as snooker. Like, I'm a big snooker fan as well. Because the fact that they're all in like snooker halls and pool tables in pubs and stuff, that's just the environment these lads have grown up in. But to be fair, Barry Hearn has professionalised darts a lot and snooker, and you don't see the massive, really unhealthy looking darts players that would have possibly existed even 10, 15 years ago. They're all kind of taking it a little bit more seriously now, you'd suggest.
Yeah, we'll move on now, but obviously the Fallon Sherrock story was massive as well.
Yeah.
One of the moments of the year, you might say.
Yeah.
Not one of the moments of a decade, or maybe it could be.
Oof.
Look, I'm just trying to get to a bad segue here because,
not bad.
You know, for the last month on Off the Ball and OTBAM, we've been running a lot of polls. There's been thousands of votes, and we finally crowned Ireland's most memorable sports moment of the decade.
Yeah.
And it was a final between two very, very worthy opponents, Katie Taylor against Shane Lowry. I'm not going to ask you who you were going to pick at the start, but we're going to play it now. Here's the moment that Shane Lowry won. The Off the Ball's most memorable sports moment of the Irish decade.
They have been counted.
This is a big moment.
And we've got ourselves a winner. The winner of Ireland's most memorable sporting moment of the last decade is this guy.
Huge crowds here, and they are cheering for Shane Lowry.
But they're going to try to utilize the slope from the right.
Shane Lowry.
No. Count again.
Open Championship.
Count again.
58% to 42% has beaten off the challenge of Katie Taylor's gold medal win in 2012. There we have on screen, if you're watching online on offtheball.com or our social channels, the full bracket. The two Irish football moments, Shane Long and Robbie Brady, beaten semi-finalists. Johnny Sexton, the O'Donovans, Tipperary and Galway Hurlers beaten in the quarterfinals, and it's all come down to Shane Lowry.
There you have it. The most memorable Irish sporting moment of the decade, crowned by the Off the Ball audience, Shane Lowry's open win.
Yeah.
What did you think it was going to be, Shane, early on? Like, what was your personal one?
Like, personally, it was Robbie Brady's header against Italy. Personally. Because I just remember where I was. Everyone remembers where they were. I was hugging strangers in McGarry's pub in Harold's Cross.
In the box out there in the News Talk studio.
Like, it's one of those moments, same as Shane Long's goal against Germany. But for me, Robbie Brady's goal. Now, it's a team thing. You have to kind of hold your hands up and look. Shane Lowry and Katie Taylor, individuals, probably deserve to be in a final. I'm not going to argue. But I think there's... in the final, I would have voted for Shane Lowry. Now, Katie Taylor's, what she's done for women's boxing and women's sport in Ireland in general is massive. But I think she suffered from the fact that it's 2012. Shane Lowry's win is fresh in
the mind. There is a bit of recency bias, isn't
it? Yeah, definitely.
Because I remember when we first kind of put up the polls on Instagram and Twitter, and I put it up on my own one. I had a lot of responses from people saying it better be Shane Lowry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of emotion tied up in Shane Lowry's win. Because people care about him a lot. Yeah, they do. And same with Katie Taylor, but it's in a different way.
Yeah.
I have to be honest with you, I'm the same. It's the Robbie Brady or Shane Long goal. I don't know whether that's because we have such a collective passion and appreciation of Irish soccer. And maybe in light of the current situation, people just don't care anymore.
Yeah, we need bright moments in Irish soccer more so now. But like, for me, one of the surprises of this entire moment of the decade poll was Cluxton's early exit. Like, I think it was a Galway's win in 2017 he lost to in a quarterfinal first round.
Yeah, and that just squeezed into the top 16. Yeah, like
that
was very surprising.
No, I didn't expect Cluxton's kick in 2011 to win the whole thing, but I definitely expected
I thought that Orox GPS would be up there in the semi-finals. So what are we saying? Bandwagon Dublin fans didn't turn up again?
Maybe. Yeah. Dublin fans just aren't. Show up on the big days, you see, the championship.
Desi Farrell has a big job in his hands.
He does.
We've got a lot coming up on the show this morning. Phil Egan's going to be popping in a little later to talk football. And Andy Lee, the big news that he's joining Tyson Fury's camp. After that, we're going to have a report on Bohemians Football Club and the relationship with those in direct provision. They've been doing a lot of good work out there. There's sports news with Tom at 8:35. We're looking at the Christmas race in Leopardstown, and then there's a bit of rugby with Alan Quinlan before we wrap. We'll get into the sports pages now, though.
OTB AM.
All right, this morning we're going to kick off the Examiner here. Inside the Examiner sports section, Paul Rouse has a really interesting piece on a really sad piece, really, on Hillsborough. And 30 years on, Liverpool's darkest days still cast a shadow. There's also Ronan Agarra's column, Leaders' Questions. And then there's a little bit on deaf ears. Derry's Chrissy McCaig fears players are being ignored by the GAA. That is one story we've seen crop up time and time again this decade.
That's a very good piece. Like, Chrissy, I know Chrissy's been in here before, and he's like clearly a very good talker.
Very elegant lad.
Yeah, he's the type of guy you can see being in GAA administration when he retires at some point. But like, he's kind of saying the GAA are too focused on fixtures and the schedule and the calendar and issues like that without realising that actually the big issue is the dubs and the gap. And like, clearly people aren't going to show up to matches if this gap... Like, it's not Dublin's fault. I was at the Dublin County Board meeting last week when Desi Farrell was appointed, and there is a little bit of kind of messing going on at this idea that the dubs, it's dubs versus everyone else.
That's existed though for ever.
Exactly. It's always been there, but now it's kind of put into focus even more so with the five in a row. But like, Chrissy's got a point. Like, if Dublin continue in this same vein, or rather if teams don't start catching up, you'd have to be worried for the future of Gaelic football, certainly at inter-county level. And when you see the finance figures at that Dublin County Board meeting as well, I think, was it went from 1.55 million their income to 2.35 million? And like, to have a jump like that is extraordinary year on year, but also... Like, other counties just can't compete with that.
It's when you compare it to the mess that's in Mayo, say, or Galway, or other county boards. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's when you compare it to that and you see the level of perhaps professionalism that's evident in the Dublin County Board, and that's been there for about over a decade now.
Yeah.
The gap has obviously widened. Yeah, Chris is always really interesting, and it's really worth reading that piece. He's done some pieces with those over the past that have been really, really good. And there's obviously been those documentaries about Shock Neal as well. There's also a little line in here that Ballyhale players are missing out in Miami.
Yeah, this is Joey Holden talking to John Fogarty. But the scheduling, they obviously have their club semi-final against Shock Neal, Chrissy McCaig's Shock Neal. But
that's a disaster.
Yeah, this is a bit of a mental story. But as I said, Holden's club teammate TJ Reid criticised the decision to move this semi-final at the start of January. Says it's unfair. Holden's also saying they don't have the opportunity to wind down before Christmas. Not complaining about being in another Ireland semi-final, but they have this Miami trip that clearly they can't go on. But it's
county,
team holiday, Kilkenny's team holiday, and the Ballyhale players won't get to go. And clearly the Ballyhale players are very important to the Kilkenny setup. You'd feel kind of annoyed, especially when you see that ASRI report during the week of players, kind of the number one issue facing any county players is that they don't have time to themselves, personal time to wind down, relax, because their calendar is so fucking condensed. Mm. But to be honest, like, holidays like that are essential for players. Like, they need a chance to unwind, to do nothing, to actually reap the rewards of their work over the year as well. And that's not something that these Ballyhale players are getting the chance to do.
Absolutely. And we've said it so many times over the past decade, like, root and branch upheaval is needed with the system. And I think that's probably what's frustrating TJ Reid, is that just the All-Ireland Club semi-finals have been moved and not everything else around the calendar. So there isn't actually downtime. There isn't actually a moment where they can actually take a holiday.
Yeah.
I absolutely do not want to put words in any players' mouths, but, you know, because I don't know the actual reasons, and I'm sure there's different reasons and varying reasons for them all leaving, but we've seen three 25, 26-year-olds, high enough profile when you're talking it's not even second tier, they're top tier, they're in around Division 1 football, they're Division 2 football. You know, Michael Quinlivan, Killian Clark, Darren McVitie from Cavan.
Conor Moynagh as well.
Is Conor Moynagh set the way? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, there was talk of that as well.
A couple of lads up around Donegal. There's a lot of players, a lot of lads in Meath in the last couple of years have stepped aside from football for the year because it's just too much. It's not sustainable to keep it going for a number of years throughout your 20s.
I have the utmost respect for Endy County players of that age bracket who haven't gone abroad or otherwise just decide to commit to the county. Like Ryan Wiley was this week named Monaghan's captain for 2020, and like he's only, I think he's my age, 26. So Bandy McInerney has named him captain, but there's an example of a player who, like, for all intents and purposes could go off and do whatever with his life and spend a summer in New York or wherever, but is deciding, you know, committing, and he's reaping the benefits, captain in this county, something that he looked back on 10-15 years, and if he perhaps had gone and hulled his last year, wouldn't have been in that position. Dan Flynn is another one, of course, home from New York as well.
Yeah, and like it's a personal choice for different players, and like to be honest, like we all have the same challenges when you're in your 20s or your 30s. You got to kind of decide what you're going to do at work and with life, and the fact of the matter is that it's moving towards an unsustainable level. And I think it's been moving that direction quite quickly over the last couple of years. And that ESRI report, if you haven't got stuck into it during the week, have a look at it. Like it's very evident that there's a number of issues that keep cropping up year after year. And it's going to get to a breaking point.
The other issue for clubs is obviously rural depopulation, and it's probably not a massive issue for your club, possibly, but...
In Meath Hill?
Maybe it is.
It probably has been over the last couple of years. For the first time in a long time in Meath Hill, we've three or four young lads coming through.
Really?
Like, it used to be one, maybe two.
A couple of younger Roonies, possibly, as well?
No, the younger Roonies, they sing, they don't play football.
All right.
One of them does anyway, one of them we might get back, but... there's a couple of young lads coming through Meath Hill, and it's for the first time in a long time in my club, the older lads aren't retiring and the younger lads are coming through. And we're a very small club, but like rural depopulation sit the likes of Monignacta, which has been in the news. A club that got so far at senior championship level, and like they could, you don't know what's going to happen to them next.
And it's commitment issues as well. I was reading the papers yesterday, Waterford, Benji Whelan, the Waterford football manager. Obviously, Waterford footballers are competing massively with the hurlers for finances and money and whatever else, but five of Waterford's senior footballers and five of possibly their top players have stepped aside for 2020. Like, for a county that's going to be struggling in Division 4, let's face it, anyway, and straight into the qualifiers anyway, that's the type of blow that some counties like that can't. Like, the Dubs, for example, could probably deal with five reasonable players. They probably wouldn't win the All-Ireland with five of their top players gone, but the likes of Waterford, that's a hammer blow for them.
We know the Dubs could put out two squads and be competitive. You know, the Dublin second team would probably win Leinster if they put them in instead of their first team.
They probably would. That's the depressing thing.
We'll move on. What else have you got there? Have you got the endo?
Yeah, I got the endo here. So Zlatan could join forces with Ancelotti at Everton. Like, Zlatan back in the news. He always finds a way to get himself back in the headlines. But it says Zlatan Ibrahimovic would be interested in joining Everton once Carlo Ancelotti's appointment is confirmed. We're expecting that appointment sometime today, but he'd probably be in the stands for tomorrow or for this weekend's game against Arsenal. Zlatan, 38 years of age now as well, available on a free transfer next month, has been examining his options as he seeks to return to Europe after 18 months with LA Galaxy. So, yeah, we could be seeing Zlatan back in the Premier League. Like, the man is 38 years of age, but when you consider the shape he's in, he clearly looks after himself. I think he does a bit of yoga as well, like Giggsy did.
Yeah.
Like, he's a 38-year-old that doesn't seem like a 38-year-old, so maybe we'll see him back in the Premier League.
He's some man, he's some character, yeah.
He's unbelievable. The Christy McCaig story is also in the back of the endo. And a photograph of Eamon Cochrane there picking up the Hall of Fame trophy at the Irish Independent Sports Star Awards in association with Croke Park. So that's the back page of the Indo. We've got the Herald here as well, this whole FAI thing. It's like Groundhog Day, we're talking about the FAI again. But no deal is the headline, and we're not talking about Brexit. But their review have said no deal to a suggestion that they can help save the cash-strapped FAI by buying out their 42.5% share in the Aviva Stadium. That leaves the FAI with only the government as an option to take over their share of the ground. The word today is that the government, in these discussions with UEFA that they're hoping to have within the next short while, will approach UEFA and say to them that they are open to funding the FAI on a government level, but that they want assurances from UEFA that basically that they will also help. So UEFA backing off from any suggestion that they will contribute to buying the FAI's share of a ground, which will host four games at Euro 2020 next year. There's also the headline, Slovakia pre-booking the FAI's training centre in Abbottstown for their base at Euro 2020 should they win through the March playoff games for the finals. So they'll use Abbottstown if they happen to win that game. So it's an interesting one as well.
That is an interesting one. I've got the Irish Sun here. Top of the header, we've got artwork Arsenal finally contact City about Mikel Arteta. There's been a lot of stories that's a done deal. It's not done yet, though, is it?
Not done, but...
It's not over the line yet.
No, but it I think in the next 24 hours we'll have confirmation of that. The issue from an Arsenal perspective is that it appears that Arteta was approached directly. We saw the photos of different representatives going to his house late at night for a two-hour meeting, but City are a bit miffed that they were kind of bypassing this whole process. There's been no discussions with them.
Really?
Certainly as of yesterday, and City obviously have to discuss the compensation issue with Arsenal as well, but for all intents and purposes, Mikel Arteta will be the Arsenal manager in the next 24 hours.
All those football clubs do business the same way.
Yeah.
That's all happening. Like,
just undercurrent
stuff. They're just complaining so we can get them back another way. And then another exclusive, the Sun are telling us, Mauricio Pochettino will not commit to Real Madrid because he is waiting to see if Manchester City come calling next summer. So, Poch watch. Mm. And also another little story here from John Fallon. Scully set for board. The FAI's interim board is set for its first female member in Ursula Scully. Scully was last night proposed by the Schoolboys FAI to replace John Early as a director after plans to promote Paddy Dempsey fell asunder on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. The front, the back page here of...
The Telegraph, you got there.
The Telegraph, yeah. Sports section. There's an interesting photo actually here. Playing Pep, the inside story of how Oxford United did battle with mighty Manchester City. City, of course, beating Oxford in the Carabao Cup quarter final. It's the Oxford manager, Carl Robinson, addressing his players at half time.
Carl looks like James Corden there.
He does. It's kind of a behind the scenes thing, but it's an interesting photo and an interesting insight in the Telegraph today on Oxford United, the backroom team. There's also at the top, Saracens face fresh probe over salary cap. Premiership Rugby hires ex-government minister to advise on overhaul of pay rules. That's quite an interesting story as well on page 2 of the sports section. Lord Miners of Truro, a City specialist with a track record for calling out poor financial regulations, is tasked with conducting an independent review as part of the league's bid to repair its battered reputation following that Saracen scandal. So an interesting story in the Telegraph today as well.
Yeah.
The Mirror is the big story of the morning, really. Paul Pogba.
Yes.
This photo doing the rounds. Like,
it's a Mirror exclusive, is it?
It is a Mirror exclusive. Yeah, David McDonnell here has it at the back of the Irish Mirror anyway. But Paul Pogba, I'll pack my bags. Teammates and Old Trafford bosses fear Pogba is now set to quit Reds in January. There's this ankle injury, of course. He hasn't featured for United since September.
Get out the door. Let him go.
It's an interesting one, like, because Solskjaer speaking during the week, it was before the Colchester Carabao Cup quarterfinal, but saying that he has a cold, an illness. And like, you'll see the photo, you probably won't see it too well there, but it's a tiny image of Pogba dancing at his brother's wedding.
Mm.
That was last Friday night. And then on Saturday, he was assessed by club doctors, and on Sunday, his condition worsened. So it's an interesting one. United fans probably a bit sceptical at the whole thing. Like, the Mirror, of course, going with the line, Pogba's teammates, club officials are now convinced they won't see him in a red shirt again. Despite Solskjaer's insistence this week, he will be back in action. So I don't know how many United fans feel about it, but if he wants out, let him go, I guess.
Get out the door.
Yeah.
Get rid of him.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even say it's disgraceful, because it probably is a bit disgraceful, the manner in which he's acting, but I just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
You just actually forget he's involved.
Yeah, you forget.
Like, I'll be honest, I watch a lot of Manchester United games. There was a period in my life where I used to fall asleep watching them when Louis van Gaal was in charge. Yeah. Then when Jose Mourinho was in charge, I lived with a couple of Liverpool fans, and that was one of the most torturous times.
Oh, that's tough.
They were torturous days.
Yeah,
they had Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah.
We had Jose. And it was tough. And then Ole came along.
You thought he was at the wheel for a while?
No, yeah. I don't care. Like, I'm happy living like this. I'm happy if Mason Greenwood is scoring the odd goals.
Scott McTominay is running things midfield.
Yeah, I don't want to watch Paul Pogba not care.
Yeah.
Like, that's the last thing you want as a footballer, especially somebody who, you know, loves a sport like Gaelic football. It's difficult to look at a footballer who just doesn't care.
Yeah, and like the photographs, like the photos today, this one in the back of the Mirror is Pogba just walking with a suitcase, but a lot of the photos in the back page of the papers today is him walking his dog and holding another little tiny dog. There's something very Roy Keane-esque about it from after Saipan when he's out walking the dog. Well, obviously Keane would not be likely associated with
it. I was about to say, like, we're so used to characters like Roy and characters like, I don't know, maybe more industrious players who are, they're the players that we gravitate towards in Ireland. Like, Pogba, a character like that, he's not built to, I don't know.
It's like, and this
he's not meant, built to build a club around. He's just not, like.
He's still the transfer record, £89 million.
He'll go to Real Madrid or he'll go somewhere, he'll be absolutely amazing. He'll be incredible. But he's just not going to deliver at Manchester United.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. January seems to be the time when he wants to leave. As you said, Real Madrid seems to be the team in for him. There's also a photo at the top of the Mirror. Klopp steals marching rivals with Minamino signing. So that's, like, when you look at Klopp doing business like that, it's the Japanese player Takumi Minamino. So Red Bull Salzburg, of course, he signed from £7.25 million. This is
amazing.
A player who is clearly a top player, 4.5 year deal. I think it's 22 appearances he's made for Japan, something like 11 goals. So he's a top player. They've got him for a steal. I saw one of the headlines. Phil Egan pointed it out to me yesterday. It was on Twitter. So Red Bull Salzburg, obviously, he's a winger as well, Minamino. Red Bull gives you wingers.
I like that.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah, I like that. There was a tweet doing the rounds today about Michael Edwards, the director of football at Liverpool, the signings he's made. It's worth looking at.
Yeah.
He's done some serious business over the last couple of years. We're going to race through these, Shane, because you've got to run out for Bolton. But Michael Clifford, the GA needs to embrace VAR but avoid soccer's mistakes, is the header in the Daily Mail. Above board, Arsenal Chiefs did talk to City about Arteta. And then there's the Rugby Chiefs, Rula taking full control of the Aviva. What else do we have here?
Couple of decent bits.
I've got the Times UK. Everton seal Ancelotti in £9 million a year deal. Premiership Rugby are bringing in tougher salary rules next year. And then Matthew Syed on Ronaldo's leap. That was insane, the hang time he got.
Was it 2.56 metres or something like that?
That was ridiculous. We won't dwell on it. What else have you got?
Yeah, the last one just there from the Daily Express. It's just a photograph of Pogba. Pug's a walker. That's the photo I was talking about, himself walking the dog and carrying the other dog. Running with the same line as the mayor, basically. Certainly played his last game for United. Exclusive United players, but he won away. French star has played last game for the club. The back of the Guardian then as well. A new dawn, Arteta and Ancelotti will watch on from Goodison stands. It's quite interesting that Everton are playing Arsenal this weekend. Happens that the two managers will be in the stands together. Johanna Kanto's in the back as well. I've been carrying an injury all year. And then better than Rio, Team GBI's record medal haul in Tokyo. That's the back page of the Guardian, Tommy.
You've brought us a star with the walkies. I think that's all, Shane, is it?
That's them all. Don't think we're missing any there.
Okay. Just to let you know, Best Menswear have the men in your life sorted this Christmas. Check them out for beautiful gifts from the likes of Hugo Boss, Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein and Marco Capelli. And with gifts from as little as €20, they will take the pain out of Christmas for you. I've got a couple of gifts I have to buy. I don't know how you are, Shane, but I've got a few left. I had two birthdays this week as well. It's my brother's 21st on Saturday night, so I've had to look after that first.
That's a look.
So all this week on OTBAM, I don't know if you've been tuning in, but with thanks to Best Menswear, we've had some brilliant prizes and some great gifts. We had Jess Kelly in talking about the tech that you should pick out this year. Owen Sheehan brought us a list of the greatest sporting events in 2020 that you should check out. Richie McCormack had some, I'm not going to say hipster, he had some retro football jerseys that are worth picking out.
Yeah, love it.
This morning on OTBM you can win a €100 gift voucher to Best Menswear. All you got to do this morning is share this morning's show, so just retweet it on Twitter or share the YouTube stream or however you're watching it. And then drop us a comment, the best comment ahead of the weekend sport wins. What are you most looking forward to seeing this weekend? I don't know who picks out these competition mechanics. I don't know. I'm just going to pick out my running order here because I've got a video that I'm going to bring you to. I'm going to let you go, Shane. Because in early January, two of our best sports stars have come together for a brand new series on Off the Ball. It's a brand new show, Keane and McGeehan Unleashed. Ellen Keane and Kieran McGeehan will be discussing their own careers and talking to Sonia O'Sullivan and Kelly Harrington in the first episode, which premieres as part of our Nollag na Mann special on Sunday, January 5th, which is a day of nothing but female voices and Off the Ball. Here's a little taster of McGeehan and Keane Unleashed.
Have you ever nearly drowned?
I actually have. So I remember, I think I was on holidays when I was maybe three or four, I was quite young, in Spain, I think. My parents may correct me on this, but I do remember having like an incident in the water, panicking, my bad dad experience. Rushing out trying to find me. Yeah, bad experience. Yeah. But surprisingly enough, that has never affected me in the water since. Yeah, and then one time I used to spend a lot of my summers in Kilkee in Clare, and I used to bodyboard all the time. And one time I got in the sea when the current was too strong, and I literally got like drifted out. The lifeguard had to come and get me, and my dad tried to come get me too. But in the process of him trying to come get me, he got stranded out there too. So I got in, but he didn't, and the lifeguard had to end up saving him. So yeah, I have had a few incidences in the water, but just my absolute love for it
brings you back.
Yeah, it brings me back and keeps me in the water and keeps
there me was me being like, oh, any young kids that have had a hard experience, like, don't let that dishearten you, get back in the water and try to get back on the horse, but maybe don't follow your suit in going into an unsafe environment off that current.
No, always look at the flags. Always, if in doubt, ask a lifeguard.
It is just before 8 o'clock. It's 8 a.m. this morning on Friday's OTBAM. I'm going to bring you a bit of Tommy Welch now. Tommy Welch has disappeared off the face of the earth since Tullerone went on their run through the Kilkenny Intermediate Championship this year. I've tried to get him on the show a few times, but he has reverted back to the Tommy Welch who played for so long under Brian Cody, the Tommy Welch that we didn't know. Joined the lads yesterday on our 15-hour special, and going through his hurling team of the decade, Tommy singled out his undisputed hurler of the 2010s.
A lad just underneath that radar then, but will be talked about as one of the best wing-backs of his era, and that's Padraig Maher. He was just remarkable in the year. We definitely went after him in the 2000 and which All-Ireland. It was 2011 All-Ireland. We put Eddie Brennan on him because we knew when Padraig Maher got the ball and cleared it, it meant it was like getting a goal. The tip crowd were on their feet. He rose the energy levels of his team. Padraig Maher was brilliant, which is probably a lot harder to do as a back. But finally, my player of the decade then, a guy who is lighting it up still at 32 or 33 years of age. I had the pleasure of trying to mark him a lot in training. And that's TJ Reid. What he's doing with Ballyhale and what he's doing with Kilkenny, like, it's just off the charts. Christy Ring and Mick Mackey are probably heralded as the two greatest players have ever played the game. Probably Ring, probably in many people's eyes. But the next level then, the Shefflins, the Eddie Kerrs, the Jimmy Dials. I think TJ Reid is in that bracket now, and it's only as probably the years go on we'll even really wonder again at the defeats that this man has done. Why he's able to do it all, win his own ball, score, take frees, pressure situations, take penalties. He's held a hook, he's held a block. He's after transforming his body in the gym, the complete player. So my player of the decade will be TJ Reid.
OTB Gold, the very best of off the ball.
Are you crazy?
This is OTB Sports Radio. This week on OTB Gold.
Get as many people as you can on the biggest path as possible and go after that. Because when you're dead and gone, that's what you'll be remembered for. Not how many All-Irelands you have.
When I was 13, 14, I was playing on about 13, 14 teams at the time.
I remember the World Cup being very little fun.
Westman lead 2-13 to 2-8.
Honestly, I thought it was just great to get an Irish shirt.
OTB Gold, the very best of off the ball. Weekdays from 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Oh, ho, ho.
It's
radio
to the future. Ho, 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 ho. OTB AM.
One last bit of contemporary news before we move on, and we can almost tie it into fights we want to see. One fight that will happen is Fury Wilder 2, and Tyson Fury's got a new regime, Andy, and apparently you're front and centre.
Oh, you are.
Repping the crown.
You are.
Sugar Hill Gang.
The band back together. You are.
Sugar Hill Gang over here. So tell us, what's the inside scoop?
The inside scoop is, I would speak to Tyson once in a while. We keep in touch, and then he got in touch with me. We were talking away, and he said, I'm thinking about bringing in somebody else into the camp. And we went through a number of coaches who we both know, or maybe I know probably better than Tyson. He was asking my opinion of them. And I put the name of Sugar Hill. His name's Javen Hill. Mm. His grandma used to call him Sugar, so now he's called Sugar Hill. Because it's a good name.
Friend of the show as well, he's been on.
He's been on, yeah. So they had worked together previously in Detroit and in Austria, the Klitschko camp. And I think, I think it will be a great fit. The way Sugar Hill trains, his emphasis on balance and punching with authority and being smart and controlling your opponent. Wilder is always going to be a dangerous fight. Mm. You know, you could have the best game plan, the best preparation, and it could still all go wrong with one punch. But Tyson, I won't say how he has to fight to win the fight, but I think Sugar Hill's a good addition. It's unfortunate, it seems, that Ben Davison will no longer be involved. That's when I spoke to Tyson, he said, yeah, Ben. And I said to Sugar Hill, like, Ben Davison's there, he's his coach, and he's bringing you in. Sugar Hill said, yeah, I'm happy to work with him. I've been in this position before with other coaches, and we'll all work together and get the best result. So whatever's happened between Ben and Tyson, it's between them. But maybe they can get it back on, maybe they won't. I was looking forward to being in the camp with them. And watching them work and learning from both Sugar Hill and Ben Davison. But
I remember before the first Wilder fight, you were saying that Tyson had given you a call that maybe he might link up with you or ask you.
Yeah, it was just unfortunate schedules. At the time because I couldn't do it. But this time, I'm going to be out there for the most of, all of February, the end of the camp, and I'll just I don't know what my role will be. Effectively.
Second set of eyes, almost.
Yeah, and someone who knows him personally as well, maybe more than Sugar Hill knows him, and someone who can just be there and give my opinion. And I also know a thing or two, so I can work him a little bit as well there.
Do you have any input into the promo tour?
No. you big dosser.
Yeah,
I'll be
entertaining as the last one.
I think he needs good, obviously you need the best sparring partners. That was interesting with Anthony Joshua electing to come over and spar.
Do you think that's bluster or do you think he's serious?
I texted Tyson straight away, have you seen this? And he said, yeah, and I've just put out a video saying you're welcome to come, so.
With the doggy ears on the Snapchat filter.
It came up on Sky Sports 2 and my dad was like, look at the dog.
Just don't call him a dosser if you want to get it.
Yeah, so but that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, Andy Lee. Fascinating stuff. He's going to be part of Tyson Fury's camp over the next little while. That's Jason Quigley, Paddy Donovan and Tyson Fury now that Andy's working with. Really looking forward to seeing what happens there in 2020 for Andy. And just to mention that the Nulligan Man special that I mentioned there with Ellen Keane and Kieran McGeehan, on Sunday, January the 5th, it's with thanks to Lidl, who are supporting women's sports and the 20 by 20 movement. We're going to have Phil Egan in studio next to talk about football and a little bit about Andy Lee. Here's a snippet of John Giles from last night.
They had to play the kids, and the kids for a long time did well, as we know, against Villa. You know, but they've gone out of the competition. We could have been going into the semi-finals of the League Cup, being one of the favourites to win it. I'm not so sure you have to go, but it's a money thing, Nathan.
Well, there's no question that there's a lot of money.
Could they get out of it? I don't know. Are they going for the money? You know, it seems ridiculous that a club like Liverpool are going to forfeit what was the old League Cup, which is still a big trophy. I know it's not one of the major trophies, but it's still a big trophy. Then go over to play in actually what is a really Mickey Mouse competition. This is a make-up competition away in a very far from home to be playing in, Nathan, in my opinion.
Mm.
I mean, it's a big money. I'd love to know what Liverpool are getting for financially. But is it going to be, you know, this is a made-up thing. I mean, are they really going to be the best cup team in the world because they're playing two matches?
Yeah.
You know, and they play well and they give everything they got. Saw them the other night, they were very good. They got a very good win and they didn't have all their players playing, which is great. But they did sacrifice the possibility of playing in the semi-final of the old League Cup.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse, Phil.
Mickey Mouse had a house, what number was it?
Yeah, could you care? Could you care about if Liverpool were to win the Club World Cup this year? Do you care if Liverpool were to win the League Cup? Does it matter?
Oh, the League Cup? No, it hasn't mattered. It's a strange competition where teams don't tend to take it that seriously until they get to the latter stages. They try and put out experimental teams and they get towards the end of it and then it's there. Like Pep Guardiola has always taken it seriously.
Yeah.
Jose Mourinho, always taken it seriously. Obviously, Spurs were out of it before he took over. And you can see Solskjaer going for it. It's a pity the two Manchester clubs were drawn in the semi-finals because that would have been a great final. But the issue here isn't that... the World Club Cup is something Liverpool have never won. So I think that is something they want to put right. It was the Intercontinental Cup back in the 80s when they lost.
Yeah.
And they definitely want to win it.
The Premier League is something they've never won as well.
True, yeah. And in a way, actually, Liverpool being away for a week or two mightn't be the worst thing. Because by the time they come back, depending on what happens tomorrow between Manchester City and Leicester, they could actually be in a better situation.
There's some unbelievable games this weekend.
Yeah.
But we'll get back to them in a second. I just want to pick your brains for a minute about Andy Lee and Tyson Fury. Because I know you're on the Off-Ball podcast with Ronan. Great exclusive to get. It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
News.
Yeah, it's funny how it's all working out, like, because obviously, you know, Andy came on board well off the ball after he retired. Remember the night he announced that he was retiring, and it didn't take us long to realise, like, just the insight, the great insight he gets, the way he thinks about boxing, and I'm sure he would have picked up so much when he worked under and lived with Emmanuel Stewart. I can imagine what it would have been like watching classic fights. Mm. Just even watching them yourself, but to actually then have to be able to pick the brains of someone like Emmanuel Stewart. So it's no surprise that when he went into punditry and like how successful he's been, and then you know he took on Paddy Donovan because you know this young lad needed a bit of guidance. Then all of a sudden Jason Quigley comes on board, and now he's going to be working with Tyson Fury. So his training career is
unbelievable.
It's been a sharp rise.
If you don't follow Andy Lee on Instagram, Body Puncher, check him out because. Like when you're looking at the sparring that Donovan and Quigley are doing, it's class.
And we had Jason Quigley in here last week for Off the Brawl, and there's just a different buzz about him. He's always a very positive guy, but just teaming up with Andy, even his win there a few weeks ago, it was a third round stoppage, and Andy little things like he tweaked that he changed the colour of his trunks, just to give him that look of a more of a killer instinct. And when he got the finish. You could just see that Andy has basically said to Jason, look, everyone knows you're a nice guy.
Yeah.
And that's fine outside the ring. But when you get into the ring, you got to be an animal.
Because we had Andy on that week. And I'm just looking at the headline that Arthur had on the piece that week when we had Andy on before Jason Quigley's fight. And it's Andy Lee issues Jason Quigley with a stark warning. Like, there's no messing with Andy.
No.
He's telling you what has to be done.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Jason and Paddy will learn an awful lot from him. What can Tyson Fury learn from him? Andy being in his camp?
Well, you know, it's another set of eyes. Obviously, Sugar Hill is going to look after him. Andy obviously knows him so well. And I think there was a bit of criticism. Ben Davison got a bit of criticism in that first Wilder fight. Freddie Roach went on and said about how he kind of thought maybe they should have looked to finish this fight because Fury was outboxing Wilder and he could have actually gone in for the kill if he wanted. But I didn't think that was the greatest look for Freddie Roach to go on TV and do that after being invited into the camp. And that's what Tyson Fury was looking for, an extra set of eyes, ears, all that. And that's what Andy, obviously a cousin, someone he really trusts. And
because he's brought him in before, hasn't he?
Well, he's always in contact with Andy.
Yeah, they're always talking. Yeah.
He talked about Andy before when he went over to America after he signed with Top Rank, and he got a knockout against Tom Schwartz early. It was the one where he did his Apollo Creed entrance, and he said, "You know, Andy Lee told me the Americans like knockouts, so I got a knockout."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's that mutual respect between the two of them, and Andy will offer a great deal of insight into, you know, what he, you know, Andy was at the fight, the first fight. He was ringside working for BBC that night when Wilder and Fury fought in LA. So, you know, he would have picked up things. He'll watch it back. He'll know what Tyson Fury can do differently. Like, Tyson Fury is going to outbox Wilder again. That's definitely going to happen. But as Deontay Wilder says repeatedly, he just needs one punch to change it. And that's what happened in the first fight. I still think Fury should have won on points, but he was down three times. So
when is the rematch?
They're looking at the 22nd of February.
Okay. So that's going to come around quickly.
It certainly is. And
it'll be long finding it coming.
Yeah. No.
Christmas is over, Phil. It's going to fly, you know?
That's it, yeah.
It's going to fly. Come here. What's happening this weekend?
This weekend. So I mentioned there the Leicester going to the Etihad to play Manchester City. We remember that game last season, where Vincent Kompany scores that goal. So, you know, City win last week. They beat Arsenal. They obviously beat Oxford in the League Cup. So people think they recovered from that disappointment of losing to Manchester United in the derby. But I'm not so sure. Leicester are that team that can hurt City, where they've got pace on the break. They've got players that can beat a press because they're comfortable on the ball. And defensively, they're decent, Leicester. So
Vardy's in unbelievable form as well.
Yeah. Exactly. James Maddison will get space. And you think back to that game in late last season where Leicester had their moments. But I think Leicester are actually better now than they were. So this is going to be a tricky one for City. And, you know, this goes back to what we've been talking about over the last few weeks, where what does he do at centre half? If he puts Fernandinho there, then that probably means more space for Leicester in midfield. And, you know, Oxford created plenty of goal scoring opportunities.
How are they such a mess defensively? Like, how? I know they're missing players, and I know Kompany leaving was a massive thing. Well, like, if Harry Maguire had signed for City in the summer, would they have these problems?
I think they still have those problems, but that's just the way Guardiola plays. His way of defending is, if we don't lose the ball, we won't have to defend. That's how he does it. And it works against most teams, but every so often, if they just the odd stray pass. And I think back to this time last year, this is where City dropped points, where they actually lost to Leicester away, and before Christmas they lost at home to Palace. But this is a game where, as I said, Liverpool are playing at 5:15 tomorrow, and this game kicks off at 5:30. Mm. So Liverpool could end up winning the World Club Cup, and shortly afterwards they could be in an even better position. I think Liverpool obviously would want a draw, but if they wanted a winner, I think Leicester, just to bury City once and for all.
Do you truly think Leicester can keep pace with City or keep pace with Liverpool all year?
I don't think so. That's what I mean. If Leicester win, that just means Liverpool are 14 points ahead of City and they'd have a game in hand.
You'd imagine that's it.
And then, as I said,
it's insurmountable. Like, who has ever come back from something like
that? Leicester were to win the last 20 games, which the last two seasons you could see them doing it, but at the moment you couldn't.
Yeah.
So you've got that game. Then Spurs play Chelsea. Jose Mourinho obviously
living off the ball on Sunday evening.
Yeah, that's going to be brilliant as well. Spurs win, they go ahead of Chelsea, which when Mourinho took over, that looked very unlikely.
It did, didn't it?
To be honest, I'm not really that surprised. I think we expected Spurs to
bounce back
because the squad, let's not forget, before the season started everyone was talking about the top two and Spurs being the best equipped to challenge them, but they didn't because
they didn't refresh the squad.
No, plus something was not quite right there with Pochettino. Doesn't mean Pochettino is a bad manager, just time for a change. Mourinho comes in, probably can't believe his luck that he's inherited such a good squad, and if he
such a solid squad,
yeah, and if he adds to it, if he can get some defenders in there, especially fullbacks, they look weak there. Obviously, he has to sort out contracts as well. If Alderweireld's not going to stay, or Vertonghen. Ericsson, I mean,
he's gone, isn't
he?
In terms of the players that Mourinho came into there, you know, he walked into a squad of Manchester United that were fractured, they weren't necessarily winners. He won a couple of trophies, but he's walking into that Spurs team, and there's a lot of good personalities in that dressing room.
Yeah, and what he needs to do is just make them mentally a bit tougher.
Mm. Look what he's done with Dele Alli after a couple of weeks.
Yeah, there was signs Dele Alli was starting to come back to form before Mourinho took him, and obviously Mourinho will take all the credit for it because that's just what he does. But
are you Dele's brother?
Yeah, so it's no surprise to see them on the up, and now we've got this situation where you wonder what Chelsea are going to do. Now the transfer ban is lifted. So at the start of the season, there was very little pressure on Lampard and, playing the kids, this is great. So now what does he do in January? Does he look at a few players and think, actually, you know, the kids are great, but we could do with some seniors in there?
Does he need somebody up front at Abraham?
Well, you want a better option than Giroud. Batshuayi is his backup.
They're flaky, aren't they?
They're not the most reliable. He needs a left back. He needs a better left back. But I think that's a game Spurs you definitely fancy to win. And then obviously you've got that situation tomorrow at Goodison Park, Everton against Arsenal, 12:30, where you'd imagine by the time this game kicks off, both will have announced their new managers, Arteta and Ancelotti, which, you know, the little quirk in this fixture is both were linked with both jobs.
Yeah.
And I think if you're Everton, you're happier that you've got Ancelotti. I think if you're Arsenal, Ancelotti would have been a better appointment short term.
Yes.
But I think Arteta is a better appointment long term. They need a complete overhaul. They need a change of mentality, a change of structure. Whether Arteta is going to be given the tools to do that.
Has Arteta proved himself enough so far?
This is absolute like Hail Mary stuff. We don't know.
It's a bit like Lampard taking over Chelsea.
We saw he did.
Lampard did a year in Derby.
At least he had a job as a first team coach. Whereas we don't know.
Yeah.
We've seen managers before, assistants that work under these great managers and then they go in and they can't do it. Look, I've no concerns about his ability as a coach, but coming in as a manager, he's 38. What will they think? And some of these lads would have played with him. There's obviously a few players in that Arsenal changing room that need a kick up the backside, whether he is strong enough to do that. That's where I think Ancelotti could have come in and done that pretty much instantly, but Arteta would probably be a better builder. But will he be given time to build? Because Arsenal, of all the teams in the top six, Arsenal are the ones with the most problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, we used to have the top four. It's become the big six. Arsenal, the way things are looking, they're not finishing in the top six this season.
Are Leicester in that top six? They're not, are they?
Well, they're not considered one of the big six, but Leicester are going to finish in the top six.
100%.
Probably top four. So that means, will Arsenal do enough to overturn Wolves? If Everton beat Arsenal tomorrow, they're only a point behind.
I know.
And Everton, one thing Duncan Ferguson has done since he's come in is he's got them riled up, playing with emotion.
Yeah.
That'll be enough to beat Arsenal.
His celebrations after Leighton Baines' equaliser.
Yeah, great goal. It's
a pity Duncan Ferguson isn't staying at Everton. They need a manager like Duncan Ferguson.
No, he's going to stay on.
His manager.
No.
It's going to wear off quick enough?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think he's just the long-term solution. But no, I think they'll, if they play with that intensity that they played, especially against Chelsea at Goodison, Arsenal have been so flaky away from home that they'll just cave in.
Yeah, there's 8 points between Everton in 16th place and Spurs in fifth.
Yeah.
So, like that can all turn around very, very quickly.
Yeah. And it's a good, like, you know, Everton have lofty ambitions under Mascheri, and they're going to move into the new stadium. And some people say, oh, does Ancelotti fit into what Everton are trying to do? You know, will he? He's never really had a job like this. But I suppose Mascheri's looking at him going, you know, this might show people that we mean business, that we're able to get somebody like Ancelotti. They're splashing the cash.
Yeah.
And maybe they're going to splash the cash in January and give him some players that he wants.
But they have, like, when you're talking about what Everton are trying to do, like, they've moved away from Kenwright, like, they've moved away from the Moyes years. You know, Mascheri has come in and they brought in Marco Silva to try to do something different.
I think they need to get
players
a blend.
Like Moyes, Keane and Richarlison.
Yeah.
Like, if you're talking about an Everton identity, I'm not sure what that is anymore. So you may as well go for Ancelotti.
I think they need a mix of those two, as in the Moyes era and a new era where you have those solid players who, you know, you can trust, and then you have the bit of flair as well. You have to have a bit of steel about you, and sometimes you just didn't get that under Marco Silva.
Phil, thanks for popping in. We have Watford versus Manchester United live and off the ball this Sunday with Dave McIntyre and Gary Breen at 2 o'clock. And then a Spurs-Chelsea with Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr from 4:30 p.m. So two brilliant games live.
Watford United will be interesting. If Watford do what they did at Anfield and sit, if they just sit in...
They're taking points off Manchester United this week, 100%.
If they sit in and just use Deulofeu and Sarr on the break, they could cause United a few problems.
Yeah,
take away that space from United in behind the defence and then... That's where United can look quite pedestrian and ordinary.
I think it's going to be a really interesting football weekend.
This time of the year anyway.
Yeah.
The next week and a half will pretty much tell us if Liverpool are going to coast to the Premier League title, because they obviously have to play Leicester, they have to play Wolves as well. Wolves play Man City. So Leicester and Wolves are the key over the next week and a half, because they both play City and Liverpool.
We've got lots more coming up on the show this morning. There's a special report on Bohemians and what they're doing with people in direct provision. There's Alan Quinlan talking rugby. There's racing with Tom Malone as well. But right now on Off the Ball, we're bringing you back to a piece with Damien Delaney, who spoke to Colin Bouygues and Enda Cole as part of our Decade in a Day on Off the Ball yesterday. Here is Damien Delaney on the iconic match that he was involved with Liverpool, against Liverpool, the clash known as Cristanbul.
Now, one of the biggest moments in the Premier League history of the last decade was May 5th, 2014 at Selhurst Park when Crystal Palace took on Liverpool. I think we all know what happened there. Liverpool going 3-0 up, and then Palace had the amazing comeback which scuppered Liverpool's title bid for that season. We actually have a man joining us today who played in that game, Damien Delaney. Damien, how are you?
Glad you.
Not too bad. Now, Damien, you actually scored in that game as well. The first goal back in the Grey comeback. Tell me, how much of a difference did the Glenn Johnson deflection actually make to that goal, or was it going in anyway?
It was going in, but I always say it was going in the other corner. It was just a slight deflection, but it was a great night, and I'm delighted just to be a part of a game that everybody remembers and is part of folklore for Crystal Palace fans at this stage. So it's something that will live with me for the rest of my days.
And like, how, just for people who don't even remember that well, how good was that Liverpool side, certainly in comparison to this side, when you were playing them that night, did you realise, geez, these lads really mean business and they could go and win the league? Or what was the feeling for you that night?
Yeah, I mean, look, there was a fantastic Liverpool team. They were obviously all out attack. They weren't quite as defensively good as the current team. But, you know, you had Raheem Sterling playing. You had, you know, Gerrard. Sturridge was top of his form there. Suarez, obviously, as well. And Coutinho. So when you think about that front four, front five, they're absolutely exceptional. Just unfortunate that they didn't have any legs going the other way. And they shipped an awful lot of goals. I mean, you remember that Flanagan was playing at left back that time, and Glenn Johnson at right back, so both very, very attacking full backs. So they scored an awful lot of goals, and they were a very, very good attacking team. But the current Liverpool team is much more balanced, has much more defensive capabilities.
Damien, when it comes to these kind of games, usually it's half time, you're 3-0 down, and people credit the manager with giving a rousing team talk that brings the comeback. But you were actually only 1-0 down at half time, and two of the goals came in the second half. So was it a kind of collective mindset that you would just, you know what, go out and attack these players? You've seen in previous games that this Liverpool side were capable of conceding late goals and conceding multiple goals in a game. So what was the kind of, what was the turning point in that game for you?
It was strange for us because I think the week before we won at Cardiff to secure our Premier League status. So we all had a very good week in training, enjoyed ourselves, and perhaps took a foot off the gas a little bit, which I'm sure the manager definitely reminded of us at a half time. He was extremely upset because I know we really wanted it done, but we didn't play well, and we weren't playing well at the time, and we definitely weren't like our usual selves. We were just kind of maybe enjoying our moment to a bit too much, but he had a goal at half time, and I don't think the second half was much better. We conceded another two goals, and we were 3-0 down, and the game just seemed to be kind of, you know, gone from us. But yeah, typical of the team that we had, that we never ever really threw the towel in. You know, even when we were losing 1-2, 3-0, we still had a goal, and we still, you know, pressed like we should have done, and attacked like we should have done. But I just think once the goal went in, I don't know, the whole of Sellers just seemed to come alive really, and everyone just, you know, and then the other two went in, and you know, I just wish the game was a couple of minutes longer because we could have went on to win it.
Yeah, and the Liverpool players looked absolutely heartbroken after the game. But just after your goal, and maybe after Dwight Gayle's first goal, could you feel the momentum building towards your side? And even could you feel that those Liverpool players were actually starting to feel the pressure here, and they knew what was on the line?
Yeah, because I think they had their mindset when they went 3-0 up. I think I remember, you know, the Liverpool fans were chanting something like, "We want 8 or something like that, because I think the goal difference, they were looking to get level on goal difference with Man City. So they were chanting that. So then obviously when we equalised, I think they realised they weren't going to get 8. So their mentality was almost like, oh my God, we've won the game, but we've not closed the goal difference. And then I think they just switched off a little bit. And even when it went to 3-2, you know, Brendan Rodgers had... Daniel Agger on the bench, I think it was, and he didn't want to bring him on, and he just kept bringing on attacking players, even at 3-1, 3-2, so they just kept wanting to win the game by as many goals as they could, and we were lucky enough to catch him.
Damien, in terms of the last decade as a whole for yourself, would you say that, or is it fair to say that the 2016 FA Cup final was your own highlight, personally?
Not really. No, I think the playoff final really would be for me in 2013, I think it was. 2012 or 2013. I think that was definitely the highlight, because that's just such a career-changing moment. And I know everyone says that, you know, if you could get promoted anyway via the playoffs is the best way. And obviously getting promoted from the Championship into the Premier League at 30 or 31 years of age, I think it was at the time, was something special for me, and it changed my life, and it changed the whole course of Crystal Palace Football Club. You know, I think Wilfred Zaha won a penalty for us in the second half of extra time, and Kevin Phillips scored it. So you know, you're a matter of minutes away from either another 50 games in the Championship or a career-changing moment and getting to go in the Premier League. So that would definitely be the highlight for me.
And one of the players that scored two of the goals in that Liverpool game, Dwight Gayle, he was always a player that I kind of, he confused me when he went up to the Premier League. He just didn't seem to push on. And then every time he went down to the Championship, he would be on fire and scoring 20-odd goals a season. How good was he? Was he capable of maybe pushing on to something better in the Premier League?
Yeah, see, Dugout's an interesting one. He's probably the best finisher that I've seen. Left foot, right foot. He is, like, you watch him in training, and his finishing is I think second to none, really, for what I've seen anyway. But when you go into Premier League, Nogueira's quite short. He's a goal scorer. You know, there's not much else to Gailey's game, and I don't mean that disrespectful, you know, to him. He's a finisher. You know, he just needs to stay in the box and put the ball in the back of the net. Unfortunately, in the Premier League, when you're a new team that come up, you need more than that. You need a number nine who's going to hold the ball up, win headers, win free kicks, you know, chase channel balls. And Gailey, obviously, that's not his strength. Whereas when he goes into the Championship with the Newcastle, who are, you know, the strongest team by far in the Championship, they can play him up front. So I think what ends up happening with Gailey, he needs to play up front with someone, you know. And it's very hard to play two up front these days, because then you can only play two in midfield and you leave yourself one short. So most managers want to have three in midfield, because you have to win the midfield battle, which means you're going to only have one up front. So I think that's what Gailey suffered from every time he's gone in the Premier League. But I still think he would have, you know, I was very disappointed when Crystal Palace sold him, because he was definitely someone that, you know, he was our top scorer 3 years in a row. And I think he only started seven or eight games, but he came off the bench and scored a handful of, like, 12, 13 goals in the Premier League. Because he was just a finisher. So if you were chasing the game and you're losing 1-0 or drawing 1-1 and you wanted to win the game and you wanted to go three up front or two up front and go for it, he was the ideal guy to bring on. But, you know, I think Gailey wanted to play more regularly. He wasn't happy just coming off the bench and stuff, so he moved on.
Yeah, and another one of those strikers that you played with sort of fits the bill to what you were describing, someone who can hold up the ball, was Christian Benteke, and he actually went to Liverpool after Crystal Palace and then went back to Crystal Palace. What was he like as a player? Was he just a target man, or did he have more to his game?
Yeah, he's all right, Christian. That's an opinion. He's okay. I mean, he needs crosses, really, if I'm being honest with you. That's all Christian can live off, like, you know. But I don't really have an opinion on him, to be honest with you.
Dame, you might have an opinion on who is the best centre-half of the last decade that either you played with or played against, someone that really stuck out in your mind that you admired a lot. Is there anyone that...
It would have to be. We played against John Terry, who was obviously fantastic in the noughties, and the first part of the last decade, he was good, and I know he was kind of tailing off just as I got to play against him. But just to be on the same pitch as him, I thought he was, you know, the best player and the best centre back in the Premier League in the last 10 years, in the 10 years previous. Sorry. But, you know, in the decade that I played, you'd have to look at Vincent Kompany. I mean, he was something else for Manchester City when he was in his prime. He was so, when he was fit, you know, before all his injuries, he was just a colossal man, big, strong guy, 6'4", 6'5", quick, good on the ball, aggressive, scored goals, could do everything. So for me, I would say in the last decade, Vincent Kompany.
Was there any high-profile player in the Premier League that you played against that was a surprising letdown, that you weren't actually that impressed with him at all, and he came with a very big billing?
Yeah, I remember we played against Chelsea 1 year. I think it was the year they won the league under Mourinho. A guy called Juan Cuadrado, who they signed from big money. He's a right winger, and I think he went back to Juventus, and he was absolutely... he's been fantastic at Juventus and other places, but I remember playing against him and he was just so disappointing, you know, because it was early on in the season, I think, as well. And I was just so looking forward to seeing him play, because I'd watch him in Italy and in international games as well. And I know he had a really disappointing that year for Chelsea. And then he went back to Juve and absolutely tore it up. So just maybe the Premier League wasn't for him, maybe London wasn't for him. So he just never really settled. But I remember being disappointed after the game, after seeing him.
And since you've played in this decade, most of your career in the Premier League, you've come up against systems, different styles of play, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, Antonio Conte, Jose Mourinho, etc. Whose team was the hardest to play against?
You know, man, I used to, obviously all the names you mentioned there were very, very good managers and obviously have certain styles, but a manager who always I used to hate playing against was Roberto Martinez when he was at Swansea and at Everton. He was total football. I mean, he was the one that put the whole Swansea blueprint in place, you know, and every manager that came in after him just kind of built on what he did. And when he went to Everton as well, it was the same. It was like possession-based football. It was ultimate possession-based football. And, you know, he used to play with like five in central midfield and one up front. And just really confusing things would happen, and they were very, very clever, and they had very, very good patterns of play and stuff. So Roberto Martinez used to always not want to play in those games because you knew that something different was coming at you.
Would you not have felt against a Roberto Martinez team that you always had a chance of scoring, though?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I agree with you, like, what I'm saying, but you knew that, like, you know, if you were playing against Martinez, if you were going to have 25% possession and you were just going to be chasing the ball all the time. But you kind of got through that because you knew that, you know, you had an opportunity to score because you knew that when they lost the ball, sometimes you could. And we had some good results against Martinez's teams. But I just going into the games, you just knew all you were going to do was chasing the ball because they were the ultimate possession-based team.
And finally, Damien, how would you sum up Irish football in the last decade?
Would I sum it up? God, that's an interesting one. Mediocre, disappointing that we haven't kicked on. You know, when Trapattoni left in 2014, am I right in saying that he left in Euro 2012? Sorry, after 2013, that we didn't kick on and just go off in another direction. And you know, we could be 6 years down the road now, and we could be a much better place than what we were. That's the on-field stuff, but the off-field stuff obviously hasn't been great either.
All right, thanks a million for joining us, Damien. Cheers.
Thanks, boys.
8:37 a.m. this Friday morning, and you're watching OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. We're going to bring you back to our competition this morning, and a reminder that Best Menswear have the men in your life sorted this Christmas. Check them out for the likes of Hugo Boss, Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, and Marco Capelli. And with gifts from as little as €20, they'll have to take the pain out of Christmas shopping for you. Yeah. All this week in OTB AM, with thanks to Best Menswear, we've had some brilliant prizes to give away. And some great gift guide. But what's the worst gift you've ever received? Is there such a bad thing as a bad gift? We took to the streets of Dublin to find out.
What's the worst Christmas present you've ever been given?
No, that Lynx kit that everyone gets every, like, you know, every lad gets off her fucking grandmother or something. Yeah, Lynx kit.
What's the worst Christmas present you've ever given someone?
Nothing. Too lazy to buy anyone Christmas presents. Like,
a popular answer.
I got a pair of Kmart underwear one time. Yeah, that wasn't too tops because my drawer was already full.
Badger. My wife never let me forget it.
I got given a hat and scarf. I'm pretty sure I wanted Thomas the Tank Engine.
Probably something that involves cleaning, like a vacuum cleaner, mop, or else jewellery that you don't like and you need to bring back in exchange. So there's the awkward conversation, like, do you have the receipt?
What is the worst Christmas present you've ever given to someone?
A lamp.
Once I was given a set of towels. Just a big towel, small towel, that was it.
The worst one I've given? I bought someone a pair of sunglasses that they already had. Oops.
At least if they lose one pair, they got the other.
Yeah. Exactly.
I always get a book, a bad book. Like, rolled out something in like 16, like just a bit late. Like, I got my uncle a wrist strap for a watch I didn't even have. He was just like, this doesn't fit my watch. And I was like, oh, sorry.
Every present is a delight, isn't it? I mean, if somebody goes to the bother of picking out a present, like, really, you're going to like it.
Wasn't a present, but I wrapped it in a tampon box.
What's the worst Christmas present you've ever given?
A box of Lindor chocolates that were like half eaten.
My girlfriend gave me like a kiss.
Cheeky, cheeky. I remember one time I forgot someone's birthday near Christmas, so I just like bought them a Big Mac or something.
I'd be pretty happy with that. Student Big Mac meal, €5, you can't go wrong.
Where are all the Rovers underpants?
I think I probably put them on backwards the first time.
There's a lot of them. I remember buying a skirt actually for my girlfriend at the time.
Yeah, I made a mistake there. That got wrapped back up and was sent back in. You know?
Socks every year.
Yeah, socks.
Yeah. Socks.
Also, what's the worst present you've ever given somebody?
Socks.
Yeah, in the last year our friend gave me a fish and then my dad killed it when I went away. He overfed it.
The flu.
I actually get nothing 1 year.
Nothing? Jeez, you must have been bold, man.
No, I just
like a cold.
No, I didn't even get that.
What's the worst gift you've ever given them?
One of his own t-shirts.
One of his own t-shirts? Yeah. Or just steal it from his cupboard and then give it back to him?
Yeah.
Right job, might do that myself this year. Fair play.
Okay, Tom Malone, welcome to the studio. We were just saying the socks are getting a hard time there.
Socks are in a terrible rap.
In our Best Men's Wear gift guide.
No problem with socks.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I'm all right with that. Yeah, you get some decent clobber in Best Men's Wear, though, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Hook you up.
You really would. What's your Christmas looking like? Are you have you been watching the gift guides all week?
Watching one or two gift guides, yeah. I would say I'm a bit difficult to buy for, but...
Are you?
Yeah, I just think I'm not the easiest person to buy for, I would say.
You have a nice collection of scarves, Tom.
Nice collection of scarves. I have a nice collection of a lot of things, to be fair. I like my good stuff. So yeah, I would shop in Best Menswear.
Yeah,
get some decent gear in there.
100%.
Yeah, because I spent a couple of days in London, so I got a few bits and pieces.
Ah, nice, good stuff.
Hooked up.
That was a good report there from Callum and Andrew. And just a reminder that this morning on OTBM, you can win a gift voucher to Best Men's Wear worth €100. All you got to do is share this morning's show, just retweet or share the link, and just send in the best comment about the weekend sport is going to win. So what are you most looking forward to seeing? I'm not going to ask you what you're most looking forward to seeing this Christmas, Tom, because I have a feeling it's going to be the racing out of Leopardstown. You're out with them this week. I think we've got a report.
Yeah, we've got a little look over at Leopardstown.
Yeah, let's have a look.
Yeah, we'll check that.
Well, we're here at Leopardstown Racecourse. I'm joined by Dave Atwood, Racing and Operations Manager. Just looking around, the fences are freshly cut, the ground is impeccable. It's building up to the Christmas Festival. You must be pretty excited.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Always a very exciting time of year for us, for the ground, for the horses, for everybody. It's a big tradition, whether you're working or not working and coming and enjoying the racing. Everything really builds up. This is a really big time of year for us. And we just need the weather, which touch wood we've had so far, to make it a really good 4 days for us.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just saying that you do a bit of a microclimate here at Leopardstown, but some people might not be actually aware of how, you know, you assess as, you know, the going is good, but it's kind of primitive, if you don't mind me saying so. Method, isn't it? Show up there in front of the camera. This is the going stick.
Yeah, going stick. So everybody, every clerk of the course has their own going stick. This is my one that I sort of made for me. So it's a bit longer because I'm taller, so it helps a little bit more. So
always boasting about the length of your stick, Dave.
I'll leave that one to you guys. We go around and we'd walk the track on the mornings of declarations and entries, and also on the day of racing and leading up to race meetings. It allows us to assess how the going is in terms of how far it goes into the ground. So you can see here that we can push it in a nice way. That's lovely. So it's going in a good distance there. So we're yielding good in places on the chase track at the moment, which is remarkable, like you said, given the amount of weather we've had around the place. And we're a little bit softer on the hurdle track. So we're very, very happy with how it goes, and we'll keep going with walking with the stick. Even Christmas Day we'll be out, and we'll make sure everything's in tip-top shape.
Looking around the place now, we're here like a week out or so from Christmas. The place is a hive of activity. It'll be quite different even for regular race scorers at Leopardstown.
It will be. There's lots of work that's happened even since the last race meetings that we've had. People will know that we're going through a redevelopment phase at the moment, which is all on schedule, which is fantastic. So even this time for Christmas, we'll notice regular goers that might have gone, say, to Club 92 in the past. Unfortunately, that is no more, and we've transformed that into a racing hall. So you'll have the opportunity to watch all the racing from here and everywhere across the UK on the screens. You've got betting facilities, toilet facilities, food, drink, everything all in one place. So it's another really good area for people to go to. And we've also got a dedicated family area now for children, which is really, really important to us. So we've got an indoor children's play area, which will be available for Christmas, and then that'll be supplemented in the new year by an outdoor children's play area. And also up there as well is for the parents to have a coffee whilst the kids are playing and burning off some energy.
Yeah,
and that's
needed.
Exactly. So and the site really comes open up. You'll see new landscaped areas to walk around, and one of the most important things is plenty of toilets now. So,
yeah. And the thing is, as well, I mean, you look through the entries as well, you know, 7 grade ones. It's just, it's quality on all fronts. You know, you're going to have a good day up here, but you're guaranteed to see good racing as well.
That's right. I mean, some festivals that have expanded, they sometimes dilute the quality of the racing that they have. We've got 4 really, really good days racing. Whether you like your novices, whether you like your hurdlers, your 2-mile chasers, or your big handicaps, there's something for everybody on every single day. And we're very, very lucky that that's the race programme that we've got.
All right, Dave Atwood there with Tom, the Racing and Operations Manager out of Leopardstown. It's all go out there. They have a lot to do to get ready for the week of racing, of course.
Yeah, oh my goodness. I went over there and it's just vans and high-vis jackets absolutely everywhere. The place is in constant redevelopment. As you heard him mention there, no more Club 92, obviously. So it was a sad day for people of a certain vintage from a certain location around South Dublin. But the place looks incredible, and it's only going to look better over the course of the next couple of months as well. If the last time you were racing at Leopardstown was last Christmas, it's going to look completely different. And by the time you get to the Dublin Racing Festival next February, it's going to look different again. Wow. They've changed it all around, new offices. There's so much work going on out there. And it feels like, see, before, sometimes when they redevelop these race courses, just put on an extension, don't really think through it. But what's been done at Leopardstown now is it's just much more connected and much better flow to it. And
okay.
Once you get there, if you get, maybe it won't be completely done by Christmas, but I'd say by the Dublin Racing Festival, a massive amount of it will be done.
Sounds good. There's a lot happening over Christmas. You're going to be busy covering the race, and what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, well, obviously the 26th is a huge day. So Leopardstown's got their grade one. They've got the Racing Post Novices Chase. There's also a grade one at Limerick, and there's a grade one at Kempton. The King George is the biggest race in the UK. So Just looking forward to Limerick and Leopardstown. Gordon Elliott spoke to him during the week as well. He confirmed that Sam Crowe is going to Limerick.
Okay.
And he's taken on Faheen, former champion hurdler, who's now gone taking over fences. In Leopardstown, we're likely to see Fakir Dudery against Larina and Notebook. These are all basically trials, essentially. Yes, they're great ones in their own right, but the thing about Christmas is it sorts out targets for the rest of the sort of year as well. So we'll see where Sam goes. He needs to get back to winning ways after he came down at Fairy House last time out. So up against Faheen, that should be a cracker. Deserved for Limerick as well with their grade one. And Kempton's King George, it's kind of there's a kind of UK triple crown, as they call it at the moment, where it's £1 million bonus if you can win the Betfair Chase, the King George and the Gold Cup. So Lawson Translation won the... He was a brilliant novice last year. He won the Betfair Chase. Suriname's actually favourite for that. He beat Altior last time out. Intriguing to see how he goes. He's stepping up the 3 miles for the last time. Last year's winner, Clan des Oboes, is in there. Willie Mullins has Footpad. Former winner, Thistlecrack, is coming back as well. Hey, it's a brilliant
all names race that I know, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. So it must be big races. So
what you're saying is that if you're similar to myself and you kind of start concentrating about horse racing around February and March, now's the time to really start listening.
Well, especially Leopardstown and looking into from Leopardstown onwards, you just get so much. Like, the thing is that the season in Ireland now has changed. So Ireland really builds up in the run-up to Christmas. Then Christmas kicks on right through to Punchestown, whereas in the UK, it starts a little bit earlier. So if you're an Irish jumps racing fan, you really need to start paying attention from now on. You got Christmas at Leopardstown, then you got the Dublin Racing Festival at the start of February. Then you're on to, obviously Cheltenham in March, that dominates everything, before you move on to Fairy House and then Punchestown at the end of the year. And those sort of key, because that's the thing, these big horses, they only run 3-4 times every season. So, they tend to have much more targeted campaigns.
Brilliant. What else we got this morning?
Yeah, we're looking to the sports action. Paul Pogba looks like he's played his final game for Manchester United. 26-year-old midfielder last played back in September, having been sidelined with an ankle injury. World Cup winner said to be ill by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yeah, eyebrow raise indeed, Tommy. Yeah. And, reports in the paper suggesting this morning that his teammates and club officials are convinced that the French midfielder has played for the club for the final time. Just a quick recap on our new favourite sport, administration. The FAI will not be helped on their financial front there by the IRFU. The Department of Sport officials met with Philip Brown and officials from the IRFU yesterday to discuss the financial woes of the organisation. And, the FAI are behind on their payments on the upkeep of the Aviva Stadium. So the idea was mooted that the IRFU would come in and potentially buy that stake, 42.5%. That's a no. So they say their funding is focused solely on the development of rugby. Rangers later on in the Scottish Premiership can look to cut the lead on Celtic to 2 points with a victory against Hibs. That game gets underway at 7:45. And the darts last night, I'm not sure if you saw this.
No, I didn't. I was telling Shane this morning that I wasn't listening to you this morning when you were chatting about it.
This is except poor Willie O'Connor. So he had a chance to beat Mervyn Price, who's the third seed in the PDC. Ex-Rugby League player as well, so he's a tough nut. But O'Connor was left with four, and so stepped up to Aki, four. And
he was left with two?
No, he was left with four, yeah, so double two.
Double two, sorry.
So the camera pans in on double two, and you just doomf, and he's gone for one, missed it, and then he goes for double one again, misses again, and then busts. And then Gervin Price comes in, cleans up, goes and wins 3-2. And he wasn't even aware, even after the match, that he'd actually completely miscounted and just lost focus altogether. So as if it's not bad enough, he had match darts. He didn't even realise.
We need a darts board in here. We could do that, couldn't we?
It's so good at Christmas.
Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, because as well, you watch for a bit and you think, this is easy, and then you just step up few drinks, and
it's
so difficult.
It's not easy.
There's more Irish action later as well. Kieran Tehan will be playing Mervyn King this afternoon. He, of course, knocked out Ross Smith in the first round tie, won in straight sets. And later on, Leinster and Ulster meet at the RDS in the first of the festive Interpros. Both teams much changed. Ulster made 14 changes, Leinster made 13. Fadd is the only man retained by Ulster, while Leinster retain Scott Fardy, who's skippers, and also Robbie Henshaw on the centre. Big night for Tommy O'Brien as well. Cool. He gets his first start there. And he's racing later from Dundalk.
Great. Thanks, Tom. We'll have Alan Quinlan in a couple of minutes to talk about the rugby. It is just gone 10 to 9 this Friday morning. A story I want to bring you right now is one about Bohemians Football Club and a good news story for Irish football. There's really been nothing but negative news about Irish football for a few months now. However, there is still plenty of quality work being done around the country, by clubs in particular. One example of this is the partnership between Bohemians Football Club and Massey, the Movement of Asylum Seekers Ireland. This is where Bows are trying to integrate people from direct provision into the club and the community. And here's a report by Callum Atkinson, Rory Carberry and Johnny Lynham. Have a look.
Sport has the power to break down social barriers. Bohemians FC and Massey have worked together for 2 years, providing opportunities for those in direct provision to attend games at Dalymount Park. Brian, who came to Ireland from Zimbabwe 2 years ago, is one person who has benefited from this connection.
Since I came here seeking asylum, it was very difficult, and I just felt at home when I got this offer to be watching the Bulls matches. So now I feel that I've got a family, the Bulls supporters and the Bulls football team. It has helped me a lot. Here in Ireland, I don't have relatives here. So I feel when I come to watch the match, at least I have some peace of mind. And since I like soccer, I now know that I've got somewhere where I can go and watch soccer. And now I have a team which I support.
I suppose, like, I'm just a Bulls fan, and maybe I've got a bit more time on my hands than other people, so I decided to, you know, get involved in an area that I thought was a good area to get involved in and no one else had got involved in. And that area to me would have been like, you know, doing something about direct provision, you know, not going out of our way to end it, because, you know, that'd be pretty hard for a football club or for a group of lads that go to football matches to do, but just to reach out to people who are in direct provision and let them know that, like, not everyone who's, you know, native Irish is, you know, unwelcoming to them. There's loads of people here and we want to welcome yous. And the best way I think to do that is to go to football and drink pints and have fun.
This partnership has had a positive impact on many of those who have taken part, helping them to integrate into the community.
What is the best way to integrate people? Is that everybody loves sport, even if they don't play it. Football is one of the key and easy sport to understand. That is why we collaborated as well some 2 years ago now with Bohemians Football Club. The gesture from them was to invite people from direct provision to just have a day out and have a stress release kind of situation to go and attend a live football in Ireland. It's been great, it's been historic, it stays in the memories of the people that would have gone through that. People still talk about that, even though they went 2 years ago.
But it's brought happiness to loads of people who are able to go every other week to games and just break the monotony of being in direct provision and, you know, being seen as an other, being seen as out there. And, like, you know, just milling around and meeting people. Like, we've made good friends with Brian, who'd be the guy that organises the buses in the camps. He's the guy who goes around going, another bus running this Friday, another bus running this Friday. And, like, Brian is now, you know, coming to Rovers away games with us and stuff like that. And, like, you know, that's a part of Dublin. He is now a part of Dublin. And his case is now, his case for asylum is now up with the minister at the minute. So it's touch and go whether Brian will be allowed to stay in Dublin for much longer. But he's become part of the community. And the only way to become part of the community is integration. It's not to be separated or treated as another. It's like, come and get involved, like, you know.
One of the things that we suffer in direct provision is boredom, loneliness. There's nothing hard or dehumanizing that can happen to a person like loneliness, okay? The benefit when you engage is you create that network. You get yourself known. It addresses the mental health that is brewed in direct provision. So when we create these opportunities for people to be able to come out of that zone of conformity, so the benefit is that once you are out of there, you can be able to live outside that box that you have been boxed in, and your mental health will improve by being active, by speaking up. Speaking is part of therapy. Speaking you'll find somebody to speak to when you engage with a person who's outside direct provision. That is the benefit. That is the main benefit.
Small actions from sports organisations like Bose can make a real difference. Can other clubs have an impact like this in their communities?
Football clubs can completely provide a leadership role, and they shouldn't shirk it. They should go, yeah, we're part of the community, we're part of what makes the country. So let's try help, you know, push society on into the way it wants to be.
It has helped people, me and the other people in direct provision a lot. You know, when you come, you don't have anyone to interact to. So when you have time to go out and watch a match, at least it gives you time to have some fresh air.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Welcome back to OTB AM this Friday morning. It is 8:58 AM and I'm joined in studio by Alan Quinlan. Alan, thanks for coming in.
No bother, Tommy. How are you?
Crack? How's your Friday morning going?
Grand. How's yours?
Going well, I think. I hope.
Little bit of panic there to start.
We're still here. Ah, we got sorted.
It's like a lucky dip. We're all getting just dipping in and out here trying to chat with you.
Get through the morning, yeah. So all going well. You're all set for Christmas?
Yeah, set as I'll ever be, I suppose.
You're not like me, are you? I'm a 23rd, 24th man getting my presents.
No, I've all sorted.
You get sorted.
All done.
There's rugby this weekend. There's Pro 14. There's Interprovincials. It's Leinster Ulster tonight. Should we care? Is it worth caring about? What are the teams?
I think the probably the big question mark about the Interpros are the selections and the changes. And, you know, Ulster make 14 changes for the match tonight. In the RDS, Leinster make 13 changes. Ordinarily, I think that's maybe to be expected that there's going to be some amount of changes, but it's a huge amount. And I think it's the trend probably for the next couple of weeks with the Interpros. They all play each other. When I played, I think there was a little bit of rotation even back then, but not to this extent. So part of me has an issue with it because in particular for Munster play Leinster in Thomond Park on the 28th of December, and we're now being told, and we have been told in the last week or two, and I think the players probably knew for a while, the internationals are at the World Cup, that they will only feature in one of the three Interpros over the Christmas period and into the new year. And I'm disappointed with that. You know, Leinster Munster is probably one of the biggest club games in Europe, if not the world. Now I know at different stages, you know, if you're playing European matches, it that's probably true. But I still think it's an incredible fixture. It's lost some of its bite over the years, and a lot of it is down to maybe the rotation of players and the internationals not going head to head against each other, and that's why it's probably lost some of the rivalry. Obviously, it's still big. Whoever wins these games, and you have the bragging rights, and you have the. You're probably trying to, at this stage, impress the Irish coach going through these fixtures and try and stand out. So it does give an opportunity to a lot of young players. Someone like Tommy O'Brien starting for Leinster tonight, it's a brilliant opportunity for him. He was a superstar kind of underage player, captained the under-20s when he was 18, played in the under-20s when he was 18, captained the team. So it does give opportunities to players, but I just think it's the player welfare in Ireland, and I have to be careful what way I say this, because I'm for player welfare, and the system here works very well. Players play less games, and if you look at like someone like Owen Farrell and Johnny Sexton over the last number of years, I know Sexton's had these injuries, but if you compare the amount of minutes that they've played, both played season on season, it's Johnny Sexton is far less, even if he wasn't injured, and that's the benefit of it having here. But for me, I just think that Leinster-Munster game is one that's the one they all should be playing.
I can tell.
Yeah, that's the one they all should be playing, and it's the biggest fixture of the Interpros.
Like for fans at Christmas, a lot of people are going to want to go to these games as well.
Yeah, and that's sold out. That's sold out. That's sold out in Thomond Park. It sells out every year. Leinster seem to get the short straw that they have to travel down. This game has more often been on Stephen's Day. And Leinster always seem to be the ones that have to travel down to Thomond Park, and particularly in the last number of years. So you could argue the place is sold out. Everyone wants to go there, but I think you're in kind of dangerous territory if that continues to happen.
Yeah.
It dilutes the fixture, and it's always been a massive fixture.
Is it a case that the fixtures, the Interpros, are just scheduled at the wrong time in the calendar? Is it that they're sandwiched between
no,
the Champions League
games? No, I think they've all... Yeah, they are. But I think... Having the players, the internationals, just play one of these fixtures is disappointing. I think when I played, which isn't that long ago, it sounds like it's a long time ago.
It's not that long.
But I think you probably would play two or be involved in two or the three. So you could only play one and a half games, but you'd be on the bench or you'd start if you're in the Irish squad. And that kind of rotation happened where half the players played one, half played the next, and that rotation went on off the bench as well. So this year, probably for the first time ever, you're getting a clear protocol that for 2 weeks. They're getting a full break for that. I know the World Cup was on, and there was a lot of preparation all summer and stuff like that. But it's just disappointing that that's happening. But in saying that, as I said, Leinster's perceived second string.
Yeah,
could probably make the playoffs of the Pro 14 anyway without any of their internationals.
You name check Tommy O'Brien there. He's a centre.
Yeah, he's a centre, and he's playing. Robbie Henshaw plays because obviously he didn't play a lot in the World Cup, and O'Brien played, represented Ireland under 20s, as I said, and he's a former Leinster Schools 110 metre hurdle champion. Right. So he's an incredible athlete. Very, very powerful and good defensively as well. So it's another opportunity for him. And if you look at someone like
Jordan Larmour stood out in the Interpro fixtures last Christmas, didn't he? Am I right about that, or was it the year before that he?
It was the year before he got that outstanding try against Munster and Thomond Park. And
it was,
of course, it is an opportunity for younger players to stand out and maybe put themselves on the map. But and that's the benefit of maybe the rotation. But there's two sides that, like I said, the fans want to see the internationals, and there is a benefit of bringing true young players. And you look at someone like Will Connors being brought into the Leinster squad this year, playing matches, standout performance against Connacht and Glasgow away, and he's earned himself
a call up to Andy Farrell's
squad. So
his stock take, as it's been put.
Pardon?
They've called it the stock take, is 45-man squad here that we have.
Yeah, it's a lot. So there's a lot of players there for
sure. We might just look at this for a second.
Caelan Doris is another one. I think he's one that kind of jumps out, and after the game last weekend, I thought he's someone that'll come into the selectors' minds as regards, possibly being in that 23. Alton Delan back in, Caelan Blade, John Cooney.
I know we were talking about it earlier in the week. Cooney's in the mix there to be your starting.
Yeah, and Will Addison, Billy Burns as well. And then Ulster have been going well in the last number of weeks. Tom O'Toole, another opportunity. So there's a lot of players in there that have a brilliant opportunity to be in that environment. I think Jack Carty would be very disappointed that he's not in it after being selected in the World Cup. But there's redemption for some guys. Like I said, Alton Delan is someone who I rate highly. I think he's an outstanding player. And he's kind of put himself back in the mix. So there's a lot of players there.
Rob Kearney was a minute?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one for him, for Rob, because I think he served Leinster and Ireland so well. He's still a top quality player. I think probably some players when become the fall guy, and he rightly or wrongly I think it's not all his fault, and he didn't have a bad World Cup, but I think the attack keeps coming up, and maybe the way Ireland played during the year, and Larmour, in fairness, he played so well for Leinster in the last couple of weeks at full back, and he's doing well in the air. So I think it's probably a change of the guard. But the attitude, and I was speaking on Breakfast Radio this morning about the attitude and discipline and desire and passion of the Arsenal players at the moment and other Premier League footballers would really disappoint and frustrate me if I was in that type of dressing room where players haven't got that desire and they don't show a real passion for what they're trying to do.
Have you been there before? Have you seen that in the dressing room anywhere?
I've seen certain players and certain guys, and I don't want to name check anyone because it's unfair, who've had periods where their attitude wasn't great, and you just get left behind. They get left behind. They don't get picked. The wheel keeps turning, and the high performance and the drive from the senior players and people who achieve incredible things just drive that forward. And that's true leadership and stuff. And Rob Kearney, it's a reaction now that you want to see from him. And it's not about setting the world on fire as regards, you know, playing outstandingly well. And but I think it's his attitude. And I know the guy, and I know he's incredibly positive, determined player. And I always remember Roy Keane telling us the story about Laurent Blanc coming into United when he spoke to us in Munster about somebody asked a question about, you know, who would have impressed him to train and their attitude and all that kind of stuff. And he mentioned him because I think Laurent Blanc had only a couple of months left in his contract and he was more or less kind of cast aside and wasn't going to start.
He was in his 30s when he joined United.
Yeah, he was. And he wasn't going to start very few games. But I remember Roy Keane telling us about the way he turned up every day. You know, first in, trained the house down, attitude, encouragement. And that sets a tone. That actually makes a difference to the whole environment.
Blanc was 36 when he joined United.
Yeah, he was, you know. So he had achieved an incredible... Easily, Tommy could have downed tools and said, look, sure, it's the last few months, I'm getting a nice salary here, it's nice environment, I'm just going to relax. But he probably trained harder and as hard as the players who were starting on the team. And Keane, you know, spoke about that. And you know his standards as regards turning up and stuff. And I think Rob Kearney will be that kind of player. He will, no matter what, no matter how long he plays for. And who's to say he won't force his way back into the Irish squad?
Yeah, so what you're saying is the door isn't shut.
I wouldn't say the door's shutting him, no. But unfortunately for him, it's the attack has been questioned and you need probably a little bit more youthful exuberance there. And Larmour has shown that, and that's the way Andy Farrell has gone. So, yeah,
but Farrell needed to look like he was making a couple of changes as well. Like, I know it's a big squad, and probably going to see a lot more changes when it comes to Six Nations.
Yeah,
needed to freshen it up.
Yeah, he does. And look, it's a change of the guard. Rob Kearney's been around a long, long time, yes. And no player goes on forever. And again, that's not saying he's completely finished. I know he'll have a big say in that, and it's up to the player himself. He's a year left in his contract. And it depends what he does at the end of the season. So he may play on, he may move abroad.
Sure.
I don't know. But unfortunately for him, that door is was closed. It's up to him to try and force it open again. But as you said, Andy Farrell, he will need to make changes. Mm. He will need to freshen things up a little bit. And there's some exciting players who are going to get an opportunity.
Putting their hands up.
Being in that squad.
That was an interesting aside there on Arsenal. And I don't want you to name any names about players who you've seen who you think have perhaps... had a poor attitude in the dressing room when you've been in there. Like, one man who's in the news this morning is Paul Pogba, and I'm not saying he's down in tools, but, you know, he hasn't been around, and there's been little bits and pieces on social media saying that he's, you know, he's grand, essentially. Like, he's over in Dubai.
There's
and,
a video of
you know,
him doing dancing.
There was
again,
a video of him on a bike as well. So you don't know the ins and outs of it, but the perception is that Paul Pogba is a bit of a Mayfainer, you might say. And I know, look, when we're talking about rugby and soccer players, there's a detachment about Premier League players.
Well, I'll tell you, Tommy, the biggest fear as a rugby player, and in my time and probably now, is if you don't play well, you get dropped. The potential then, your contract is up at the end of the year, or you might have a year and a half left in your contract or whatever. You're getting a year what they're getting a week now as a soccer player. They don't care. They're signed up for 3, 4, 5 years. They'll move on to another club. And maybe that, if that was the case in rugby, maybe you would have more of that scenario where fellas do down tools and don't push themselves, don't do the extra training sessions. I remember one time Paul O'Connell sending out a text message to us on a Saturday morning that we were in the Irish squad. We had a weekend off and text message came through. Anyone interested in going into doing a fitness session in UL on a Saturday morning? And we had a hard week's training already done, and it was a block where we weren't, it was a block of kind of fitness training that we were doing with Ireland, and we weren't playing at the weekend. So I my attitude straight away was, I've just done an incredibly hard week and I've pushed myself to the limit, and this is my weekend off and I want to relax. And then I thought, well, if he's going in, someone else will go in, and then someone else will go in, and someone will get the edge and I'll miss out. And you know, within the space of a couple of hours or an hour or two, whatever it was, there was eight of us probably down in UL doing a hard fitness session with no fitness coach, and we killed ourselves for an hour. And I remember that's the kind of stuff that I you know, was being player driven. And look, it's not for me to say about what Premier League soccer players should think.
We're only speculating here.
But, you know, you just get a sense that, and you just get a sense that Pogba, Lingard, these kind of guys.
It's the Arsenal dressing room as well. You're seeing a lot of problems emanating from there.
It is, but it's just sometimes when you go near that social media scene and you're putting up videos of yourself, you're leaving yourself wide open if you don't perform and play well. And I remember Keane saying that about Jesse Lingard and Paul Pogba. That he's just, they're not his type of fellas and players. And I know the world is different. Yeah, the world is different now, you know, with social media, and people can have a bit of fun in it. But if you're posting stuff up on videos of yourself dancing around dressing rooms and stuff like that, and you play shit the week after, well, you know, you're leaving yourself wide open. So there is a case sometimes of keeping the head down, just work hard and get a balance between, you know, showing that over-exuberant celebration on and off the field and getting it right, because you have to have fun on the sports field as well. And
The two players, though, we've name-checked when we're talking about these atmosphere or these...
There's probably loads. They're in every club.
Paulie and Roy Keane are two of the most exceptional characters in Irish sport in the last 20 years.
Yeah, but Rodge was like that. Dricka was like that. Johnny Sexton was like that. You know, some people were different in the way they spoke and said it, but, you know, I was in a dressing room of high achievers, of someone like John Hayes didn't say anything. But I tell you, if he did open his mouth and you weren't pulling your weight, you'd know about it. Because you need to know your lineouts right, or you need to make sure you're scrummaging right, or whatever segment of the session. And sometimes it's not about being vocal; it's just about knowing that another person is putting the effort in. And like I say, I was far from perfect when I played or trained; didn't do everything right. But I always felt that everybody can have lapses in concentration and relax a little bit, but I think it's really important that you turn up and you feed into the team you're playing with. It's different in individual sports, you can do whatever you want, but when you're playing the team, and I think...
Have you ever been in a dressing room where the environment isn't as purely player-driven and as... You know, I know you've been surrounded by these players throughout your playing career, but like, have you ever sat in a dressing room and gone, do you know, we're off it at the minute?
I've sat in a dressing room and knowing that we're not playing well and that things are going bad and we're forcing it, but I've never sat in a dressing room where I've looked around and people have infuriated me because their attitude or desire or passion or their work ethic isn't right. I've never been in that dressing room. I've met, you know, there's always been individuals at times who've maybe got used to having a few pints for a period of time and their fitness has dropped back a little bit, or they've come back after pre-season not in great shape or whatever, and we've all been in that scenario. But there was one part of my career that I loved is the competitiveness of the way we trained, particularly with the province, because, you know, they're the guys you're with all the time. You go up into the Irish squads then and you see there's a kind of an envy, or there's a kind of an intrigue about what other fellas are doing and the way they're training and stuff like that. So when people ask me about, you know, missing the game, I miss that part. I love that. I love that competitiveness of the training and the challenges we used to put against each other. And when we went away in camps to Poland with the Irish squad, you could be training with Leinster or Ulster lads and you'd be doing fitness sessions and you'd be helping each other and pushing each other. And that's an incredible place to be. The pain of probably doing it at the start is difficult at the start of pre-season, but the fitter you get,
I can imagine,
there's a great kind of buzz out of doing that sort of fitness. I'm sure these guys train hard to a point, but do they really hurt themselves? Do they really care? And that was always the case. And the worry about overseas players coming into the provinces here when I played was, how much do they care?
Yeah.
Does it really bother them? They're on a big salary. They're probably gone 2-3 years down the line. And you look at someone like Doug Howlett, who came into Munster, stayed for such a long time, was a superstar, record All Black try scorer. And, you know, we went, wow, he came in, trained like a champion, you know what I mean? His attitude was 100%. He had his game face on when he went out on the pitch. He was good fun off it. And, you know, that's, you just love being around people like that, because they actually wake you up sometimes when you're a bit kind of lackadaisical around your training, and you go, like the text like message.
As Keane
yeah,
that,
and you know yeah. what I mean? Those guys in the dressing rooms are phenomenal and they're really important and they may never play. Mm. When we won the Heineken Cup in 06, I think, you know, the most important thing for us was there was guys who trained with us all year who never got the chance, didn't get the chance to be out on that pitch, and they were the ones who were the Laurent Blancs, who driving turned up, trained, who went hell for leather against us in training and stuff like that, and that's really important. So for me, it's a real problem with football, and it's not just at United, it's at Arsenal, it's at lots of clubs, and it's sometimes it's player driven, and it takes time because.
But you can't buy that attitude. You can't buy a player driven.
But you need a good leader like Klopp. Klopp is probably the one that has done a brilliant job with Liverpool, Guardiola. You know, there's many great managers, I suppose. I thought Pochettino was doing an incredible job with Spurs.
But he did for a number of years.
He did. And maybe every manager and player has their time and stuff like that. But for a manager to have to motivate players and, you know, stop them sulking. And, you know, you see Ozil coming off for Arsenal there last week and, you know, he's sulking. His team are down. He's sulking.
Well, there was a number of things going on with Ozil, I think, last week.
Well, there's always a number of things going on with him.
I think there was the fallout in China that I'm not versus.
Yeah, but look, I don't care. You go out onto the field.
There's a number of players in that Arsenal dressing room that are seem to be causing issues off the pitch. Yeah. And you can see that when Solskjaer came in to United a year ago, he got the bounce of a number of results for 6 weeks, 2 months, whatever it was, up until that PSG result. Arsenal didn't have that at all. There was no bounce. There was no, like, oh, we've someone new in now. There seems to be serious problems in it.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge for Arteta now is
if he gets in,
you don't want to discard people, but I think you give everyone a chance, but you set your own standard and you start clearing them out, and if they don't kind of live up to that standard.
So, Leinster Ulster tonight, we're looking out for Tommy O'Brien. Is there anyone else we're looking out for tonight?
Well, like I said, Will Connors again. I think he's...
he's in the squad for Andy Farrell's squad, yeah.
Yeah, he's in the squad and he's... I think himself and Scott Penny coming back as well, that back row, and Max Deegan, so...
That's a good back row.
Yeah, it is, yeah, and Harry Byrne starting at fly half for them. Bill Johnson for Ulster, who came up from Munster last season. I think it'd be interesting to see how he goes. I'd love to see him get a run of games for Ulster, but I think Leinster would be too strong for him tonight, and...
And then Connacht Munster, what are you looking out for?
I think you don't get the team till lunchtime, it's a tricky one. But I think Connacht will be less affected, obviously, by
players.
Yeah, Jack Carty and Bundiaki were the only two away from them. So Andy Friend is probably in the strongest position for these interpros in the next few weeks.
Before I let you go, Rod was on, Ron McGarra was on last week, and he picked out Keane Healy as his player of the decade in Irish rugby. We had Brian O'Driscoll in yesterday. I'm not sure if Brian agreed with Ronan, but we'll have a look at who he picked out as his player of the decade.
It was a real shame that I would have loved to have been able to finish provincially as well with him, because he's an outstanding player. He is a really, really outstanding player. And you look at the importance he has to Ireland and to Leinster still, 10 years on from his debut. And those big moments, obviously the drop goal in Paris, he's being a World Player of the Year, and I think he was comfortably World Player of the Year last year. He was a joy to play with, and I've seen even a development and an evolution of his game. And a steelier mental toughness. He's one of the best pros I've ever come across too. So
that's a bit that's maybe a little bit underrated, because when he comes through first, he's kind of
jowly.
Yeah, very jowly. He looks like someone who hasn't grown into himself just yet.
Mm.
But whatever about the physical development, you can see that. It's the way his game changes. It's the understanding. It's the kind of constant study.
He's encyclopedic in his knowledge of... He's a very smart guy too, intellectually smart, but rugby-wise, being able to remember anything. So you could call back a play that you've done a year or two, three, four, and he'd remember exactly what you're talking about. It's quite frightening.
Brian O'Driscoll there on Johnny Sexton. Alan, you were looking perplexed there. I kind of landed this one on you. You should be ready. All we're talking about is the bloody decade.
Yeah, it's...
Who is your player, your Irish rugby player of the decade?
It's probably Sexton, and I'm picking two of them. Murray, I just think the contribution that they've made, the consistency, I know the last few months it's been skewed a little bit,
sure.
But I just think both those players have been outstanding for Ireland. Rog mentioned Keane Healy. I think he's been shown incredible durability as well and high level of performance. He's had his injuries too, a couple of serious ones.
Rob Kearney is obviously another player for
Yeah, Kearney as well. Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's his consistency and the way he bounced back kind of when he was in probably in a little bit spot of bother around selection in Chicago. So there's a number of them, but you didn't give me much time on this one, Tommy.
Sorry, Quinny, we'll go with that. That's perfect. I know you got to get out now and start the parking.
Yeah.
You give me a shout if you get clamped, will you?
Yeah, I will do.
Hopefully they don't go after you. Okay, just before we wrap this morning on OTBAM, I just want to say congratulations to Alan O'Sullivan, who is looking forward to Liverpool in the World Club final this weekend. All we want for Christmas is the league. Hear, hear, says Alan Quinlan in the corner.
Absolutely.
That's all with thanks to Best Menswear. So, Alan, you've won a €100 gift voucher to Best Menswear this week. They've been with us all week with some brilliant prizes and gift guides. So you can look back at all that on offtheball.com. And you should check them out for beautiful gifts from the likes of Hugo Boss, Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein and Marco Capelli. They've got gifts from as little as €20 as well. So they'll take the pain out of Christmas shopping for you. That is it for us this morning on OTBAM. If you've missed anything, you can get the podcast back on the Go Loud app, on Spotify, wherever you get it. It's time-stamped, so you can skip through to wherever you want to go to. There's lots coming up on Off the Ball this weekend. There's Spurs-Chelsea on Sunday, and there's live commentary of Watford against Manchester United too. We'll be back on Monday morning with Ger Gilroy and Dave McIntyre. Have a good weekend.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.